Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.
Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR Podcast Network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 162. That's right, 162, people. Wargaming Against Depression with Joshua Shoebridge. So as you can tell, longtime and new listeners alike, we're in for a treat because I have a very special guest coming back. It's his second appearance, although it feels like it should be many, many more by now than that. But we're going to be talking about something very, very important, and I need to start off by saying two things. First of all, you guys know the deal, show notes, right? We're going to cover a lot of stuff, so just remember, you're not going to remember it all, right? But you can remember the link to the show notes, wargamingrecon.com/WR162. That's wargamingrecon.com/WR162. And then the other very, very, very even more important thing to remember is this disclaimer. Neither Joshua nor I are medical professionals. We're not giving you medical advice or treatment or any of that kind of stuff. If you or anyone you know or love is suffering from any of the things we talk about or any other medical issues or ailments, please, please, please seek qualified medical help immediately. And if you are suffering from depression or anything like that, potentially helpful resource, at least here in the U.S., is the Good Samaritans. They're there anytime, day or night, to talk you through whatever you need to talk through. They have a telephone number, 212-673-3000, and they also have a website. I'll have a link to the show in the show notes to the website and also the phone number. We're not medical people, so this is just anecdotal information and advice, and if you do need actual medical help, I hope you will very sincerely go and seek it. Or if there's someone you know who needs it, that you will encourage them to do so as well. With that out of the way, and it's important to get all that legalese out of there. But with that out of the way, I am very, very excited and delighted to welcome the one and only Joshua Shoebridge. Josh, how are you today?
Well, yeah, I'm actually doing quite well, which is really good.
I'm really excited, actually, because I was very excited the first time when you had agreed to come on. And then you did an episode of your podcast, the Hobby Desk Podcast. I'll have a link in the show notes. And in that, you actually talked a little bit about what we're going to discuss today. And at the time, I listened to it like a bunch of times because that episode really struck a chord with me. And then I wrote you like a novel just talking about it. And
it took me a while to get through it. It was like, I just needed chapters and stuff.
It's like 55 pages long, like footnotes. It's bold here, italicized. But basically, I was really, really impressed by that episode of your show. And I thought, oh man, you know, I wanted to have you back on to talk about anything really, just to talk about the weather, just cause you're a joy to have on is what it is. And oh, this you. Is it. This, you know, there's so many people I feel can benefit from hearing about your experience. And I'm just grateful that you're willing to come here on Wargaming Recon and to talk about it and share just this aspect of your life with everyone. So I think this is going to be a good show. And I also need to mention though that I know some of our listeners live down under, and if they're anywhere near the area, they should check out the Marimbula Wargaming Society, because you guys get together and you do all sorts of really cool wargaming stuff. And I get to see that on Facebook. So it's really neat. When I get to see photos and hear about things going on down there, but people should go and check that out too.
Oh yeah, I'll tell you, it's the Marimbula Wargaming Society started out with just me and a friend of mine, Tom, who has appeared on my podcast a couple of times. And, it was an escape. It started off as a fortnightly thing. Now it's a weekly thing. We're being put up by a person who owns a fish and chip shop. He's got a shop space next door. And we've gone from 2 to around 46 people who are members of the club. And it's a really good group of people. A lot of great friendships have been built because of it. And I have to say, if you've got the position to have a club, go to the club. That's one of the first steps of just making new friends, and especially in the hobby and the community, giving something like that up, which is fair, is something people need to do.
I hear you. I mean, around here, for me, there's nothing exactly like that, at least not local enough. But what I happen to have is there's a group of us who tend to play the same kind of games and tend to get together. So we'll talk with each other and schedule stuff. And what's great about it isn't just playing the games, but we hang out beforehand, we hang out after, and we just kind of chat about all sorts of other stuff, you know, both while we're there and then outside of that, we'll text each other or chat online or send little messages about just things that are going on in our lives. And some of us have been invited to weddings for other people and all that kind of stuff. So it's cool just to have those connections. And I think this kind of relates to what we're going to be talking about today, because I think in this day and age, although there's been a lot of advancement for how men should feel and their emotions and connections with other men, it's still kind of standoffish. It's like outside of a specific purpose, outside of work or whatever, men, I don't think, are encouraged as much to have these bonds of friendship and to be opening of their feelings and what's going on in lives and what they think about stuff. It's supposed to be very, you know, rigid, and you're supposed to keep all that in because it's unmanly to do so. But I think that's changing. And all of this, I think, kind of helps to realize we're just all people and we all feel and think the same kind of things. And so I think it's good if we have these opportunities to form these bonds and to talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, you're dead right on that, especially in Australia. Australia, in its tradition, sees men as they're the what we call the battlers. They're the ones who battle every day to just get everything right and put bread on the table, take care of the family, and that's it. That's it. So you just draw a line there. That's all men are. They're tough and nothing fazes them. Reality, we're seeing in Australia mainly of the blokey blokes, this is struggling, this depression in Australia. And then you go down the line, you've got the your tradies, which like you can your carpenters and your plumbers and your electricians and then your professionals. So that if you go down the line, a lot of the biggest areas of depression in Australia are adult males. And that's where it's quite scary to see that large statistic, especially me being an adult male in Australia. you fall into this category of things that are very likely to happen to you.
Why don't we dive into some of the specifics with you exactly? Now, you've come out on your show to say that you suffer from depression. I know there's a variety of types and causes and things like that. What type of depression is it that you happen to suffer from? And why don't we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's fun. The medical professionals that I saw have stated that I suffer from what's called environmentally induced depression. And that is because the environment I was brought up in and seeing myself continuing to, it's part of it is perception on my part and parts of my brain that find it very difficult to accept positive reinforcement. Like I could be told that I'm the best 5 times, but the minute someone tells me a negative thing about me, that's all I think they've said. And that's a unfortunate aspect on, so yeah, that's the longest way of explaining how my brain works in that regard.
So you mentioned that part of it for you is that you can get a lot of praise, but that one person who says something like, oh, you could do this better or whatever, that's the thing that sticks with you more than all of that positive reinforcement. I think that's true for everyone to some degree, but for you, that's especially true. That's probably a primary factor of how you experience things. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, that's correct. I work from home. I'm at home most of the time. During the times where I'm not having to do my employment, I can clean the house, have everything ready for when everyone gets home from school. But then let's say I forget to do the dishes or something like that. Someone will make a comment that it's not done. And then I feel like that I've done nothing the entire day. It's just this feeling. It's just really weird feeling of, even though I've done everything in my power, one thing could be out of place and but that's it. I feel like I've let everyone down.
Well, that's quite a feeling to have. I mean, to have that burden with you all the time, knowing that no matter what you do, that someone else might say something and have it come across as if it's not enough. It's almost Sisyphean, really, in that you're always pushing that boulder up the hill and it never gets there.
Yeah, well, that's it. And it's an everyday feeling. I wake up feeling that am I going to do enough today? And for argument's sake, today has been a fairly long day for me. I got out of bed and I went straight to work doing things that I had to do on my honey-do list, as I call it. We have to go take a large section of kitchen cupboards and benches out of something, out of a place down the road from where we lived. And we had to take those out, remove them properly, and then bring them back to my house and then put them in my wife's side of the shed where it took longer to start with, but it took longer than what we anticipated, and it took more trips in the car than anticipated. And so those two things out of my control, I felt the day was my fault. I should have done it better. So I was starting the day in fear that something was going to go wrong. I perceived two things went wrong, and I spent most of the afternoon thinking that my wife was angry with me because of that.
Was she angry at you, or?
That's the thing, she wasn't.
Oh.
But I perceived that she was. And so I've got this niggling feeling in my head going, she's angry with me, I'm waiting for her to have a go at me. And that is not a feeling you want to have. You don't want to be staying there in this specific spot all the time thinking that someone's angry with you and you have to deal with it.
That has to be a terrible feeling.
It sucks. It sucks massively, but again, it's quite difficult to let go of those feelings. And because of that too, it has this little roll on effect. Like if I myself get angry or feel any form of negativity, that's hard for me to let go of that as well. So say if I'm angry, it's hard for me to say in 5 minutes, let it go. It takes me a few hours, if not a couple of days, to let go of it. And that again in itself is quite difficult to live with as well.
So you've managed to describe what some of the triggers are or causes. I don't know if that's the right word, but what some of the things that allow you to feel the flare up of your depression.
Yeah.
How do you get through a day? Like, how do you manage to cope?
That's, I don't know.
or do you? I guess is the question.
It depends on the day. There can be, like, I had a severe bout of it. It lasted for about 3 days last week. And I shut down. It was like I was on autopilot for a few days where I wasn't talking to many people. Difficult to find joy in anything. It was very, very difficult for me to fulfill my obligations, like with the church, within the club, with at home. And all I honestly really wanted to do was sit on my couch and watch Vikings. That's all I wanted to do. I couldn't even be bothered, painting or like doing any of the things that I would usually do. I found it quite difficult to get off the couch to do it. I just did the things that I had to do, and I filled my time with the things that I had to do.
I used to work with this woman who retired, and we were really, really good friends. And so we've kept in touch, although not so much recently, and that's my fault. But one thing that I had difficulty with was I didn't realize that she suffered from depression, and that her depression grew worse because of medical situation with her husband. And so I would send her emails and ask how she was doing and what was going on in her life, and I wouldn't hear anything. And days would go by and weeks would go by, and sometimes months would go by, and I would worry and think, well, what does this mean? Did something happen to her? What's going on? And what really helped me was when she was eventually able to write back to me and say, do you know, things aren't always so wonderful for her. And that sometimes she just feels that she doesn't even want to talk to anyone, that she can't bring herself to get behind the computer to send a reply to an email. But for her, it was helpful to still get them. So I learned that even if I didn't hear back from this person, that it was good for me to send emails and to get in touch with my friend, because on some level that was beneficial to her, that she may not have been able to reciprocate each and every time, but that she was able to take what I was doing to heart, and that she appreciated that I cared. And although I couldn't really do anything to improve the situation for her, just by reaching out and having that contact and hearing from me was something that was helpful to her, and that when she was able to come out of that darkness, even for a moment, she would take the time to get in touch back with people who had reached out to her and to see what was going on in all their lives. And for me, it was a big, big surprise, because when we worked together, she was always someone with a big, big smile on her face and always a big friendly laugh, and the one who was always supporting everyone else. And so having that front was something that surprised me, because deep inside there was a lot of sadness.
You know, that's what a lot of people go through. And on the flip side of that, there are people like my best friend, who I used to co-host a radio show with. I won't mention his name, just for, I haven't asked him if I can use his name or this story, but what had happened, it only happened yesterday, and it was quite scary. I've known him since high school. I've known him, we are polar opposites. I'm a religious person who likes fantasy and wargaming, and I vote in a very different way to he would vote, and he is an atheist, Formula One loving person who would worship Michael Schumacher as his deity if he was a deity. But, we have been, because of those factors, we have been the very best friends for so many years. And he has had, both him and I have suffered at multiple points in our lives since before we knew each other to now, with different types of depression. It affects us differently. And he goes through these times where he is suffering with lots of amounts of anxiety. And just yesterday he posted this very disturbing thing on Facebook that had a lot of his friends, including myself, worried. I was fortunate enough to have contact with his parents and with his sister to make sure that he was fine. There was issues where we were worried for his safety. And I can say now that just that one thing that he said on Facebook got over 70 comments, and I'm not including the replies to comments and that, just saying how in support of him. Fortunately, I was able to have a brief conversation with him last night before I went to bed, but it's amazing how, like, for him, he didn't want that sort of outcry of support. He just wanted to know that the closest people to him, his best friends, his family were there by his side, and I'll be fortunate enough to have him come and visit with me in a couple of weeks. A very busy couple of weeks coming up. So people with depression, they take things very differently. You can either shut off, or you could become hyper and throw yourself in the mix. And that's depression. I define depression a little bit like autism. There's so many different spectrums. Everyone at some point has a little bit of both of them, those things. And it's just up to us as a culture to not just say, oh, that person needs to harden up. It can get quite serious. And I can speak from experience that depression can get quite serious.
I have some friends who I can only imagine what your friend had shared online and some of the feelings that you had, because I have had friends who've shared things online that, yeah, it made me wonder if I needed to call 911 right away, if I needed to get emergency services over to where I thought they would be. And it's scary. It's scary to be the person outside of that. And it has to be scary for the person feeling those things and feeling that there's nowhere else to go. So one of the things that really struck me about when you kind of first started talking about this and the things that you go through is that you mentioned how wargaming actually helps you. And I was surprised because I've never heard anyone talk about how gaming can be therapeutic in that sense before. So you intrigued me, and that's something that I'd love to know more about how it helps you and what does and what doesn't. Because I know there has to be some tips that have worked for you that can work for other people as well.
Well, see, to start with, statistics, don't ask me how I know this stuff because it gets quite long and boring, but statistically, for someone who mentions on a public forum that they are going to do something to themselves that could lead to them permanently injuring or fatally injuring themselves is actually quite low. It's somewhere in like the 10-12% of people will actually follow through with it if they mention it in a public spectrum. On the other side of that, most of the people who do that don't say a thing. They don't mention a thing that you'll know after it's happened. And that's the scary part. The reason why I'm saying this is because I did that episode to talk about it, because if I said to myself, if I talk about it out loud, if I talk about my depression out loud, it's putting me in this pressure in like a peer pressure that I'm not going to do anything wrong. And for me, the circle of peers that I have are war gamers, or essentially the people at church or people who are at my wargaming club or my family. And so I looked at my life when I was literally quite low, and I needed to find a way to give myself an excuse to get out of the bed, to make sure that I was, I had a purpose. And yeah, people can say, you've got children, you have a wife, that's why you should. And yes, a responsible adult should always put their family first. And I totally agree with that. And I do put my family first. When you are in a place where you think that your family would be better off without you, that's where you need to find another outlet. And so I looked in my life and I said, what things have, I have a very good understanding of the scriptures. I could possibly study them more, but I understand them all right. What is there? And I looked at in my shed where all my old meetings and I just live, the stuff shambles. There's so many unbuilt kits. There are so many unpainted models. There are so many wargaming rule sets that I haven't learned. And I just looked at it and went, this is it. Like, I really enjoy it. I love history. I surf in it. And at the entrance, the therapeutics was, here's what I've got. I've got an excuse to not do anything stupid. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this on the other side. I know I can do it here, so I'm going to stay here. I'm going to do it. And that was one why I did it. It is, I call it the Star Wars syndrome effect, for me at least. And I'm so lucky to have my 2-year-old son is so me. I posted on Facebook on Mother's Day, on Star Wars Day, on May the 4th, Alex saying Happy Star Wars Day. And it was, everyone thought it was cute. Even my wife, who hates Star Wars, thought it was cute. Roll around a few days later, it's Mother's Day. And I practiced with Alex, say Happy Mother's Day. And he could say it. He said it well. And he said, and I said, all right, go say Happy Mother's Day to Mummy. He goes, Happy Star Wars Day, Mummy. And it was, Alex absolutely adores Star Wars, and he adores all the things that I want to say I subjected him to it. But I love the joy that he gets when he sees Star Wars. He goes to bed with a little soft Chewbacca toy that he calls Puppy. The smile he gets is the same smile I get. And I'm 28 and he's 2. And I remember sitting watching when I watched The Force Awakens, and I sat there and the entire movie, I had the biggest smile on my face. It was because I felt like I was back at the young age I was when I first saw Star Wars. And I, from then to that point, was compacted in to this world that I could escape to at any point in time just by watching a movie or playing a game or reading a book. And it was the lore, the mythology, the everything that goes into it, and the experiences you get while you're in there, you remember those things. There's life lessons. And I get the same feeling that I do from that, that I do. When I'm leading a Tomb King army in Warhammer Fantasy, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to lead Cetra and I'm going to win this battle, win skins. Or on the other flip side, when we're playing a game of Hail Caesar, I am going to lead this as King Baldwin of Jerusalem and I'm going to kill those Saracens. I'm going to protect the Holy Land. And you put yourself in these shoes. And I very rarely remember the conversations I have at club. I remember the games and the people I play against. We incorporate what we talk about into the game, and it becomes this social aspect that's needed for someone who is just blocked out and not wanting to talk to anyone. It forces you to unblock and to talk. And I'm so grateful I've got these amazing friends who I game with who understand where I'm coming from. Most of them do. Not all of them, not all, a few of them are oblivious to what goes on in my life, but that's not their fault. It's just how adult life works. But, I'm actually also lucky enough. I've got, two people I play with are men of faith, actually your faith, which is really cool. So we have this mutual understanding of each other. And another really good friend of mine who I play with is a doctor. He's actually one of the best doctors in the area we live in. And he has this understanding of things, which he can tell if I'm having a down day. He says, Josh, what's up, man? Talk, what's up? Here's what you should do with it from a medical point of view. So I've got this circle of friends because of wargaming that helps. And I've been rambling on for ages.
I think what really, what you talk about is that sense of community and that sense of belonging. And you mentioned with Star Wars, for example, as people probably know, I am a huge fan of Star Wars. Not so much the new movie, but that's for another time. But just in general, Star Wars is one of the greatest loves of my life. And being able to share that with people is a wonderful thing, especially where, as you said, it's not something your wife buys into so much, and maybe she doesn't understand fully the impact and the way it makes you feel, that like happiness that just starts in your gut and it works its way up and it bubbles and it makes you smile and think of happier times and wonderful places and things, and maybe being able to have that community where you can talk about these kind of things, you have that shared interest, is a wonderful thing because of the way it makes you feel, and it allows you to lift yourself up a little bit. And perhaps that's something that could be helpful for other people as well. And it doesn't necessarily have to be Star Wars, for example, but I'm going to make a presumption and say that anyone who's listening to the show likes to wargame and likes to talk about wargaming rules and games and tactics and army lists and all that kind of, I'm not a fan of talking about army lists, but all that kind of stuff. I'm also going to go out on a limb and say that most of us who are with someone, whether we're married, we're seeing someone, we have a girlfriend, we have a boyfriend, whatever, or that our significant other might not like wargaming as much as we do, if at all. So being able to be with like-minded wargamers and to talk about those kind of things is I think is really important, and especially on a recurring basis. And in for someone like me, where the closest I come to being able to personally feel some of the things that you do is I've never been diagnosed with it, but I just know that when winter comes, as much as I love winter and I love the snow and I love December and all that kind of stuff, I get a little sad. There are days I just think, you know what? Today's not a good day. And that's doesn't even compare to what people with other types of depression really feel. And I understand that, and I'm not trying to compare that to that, but And times like that, those are the times when I don't want to get out and game with other people. I don't want to go wherever, but I know that I need to because I know it for me, it helps. Just being around other people, helps, even if it's someone who like annoys the bleep out of me. It's good for me to be around them and for them to annoy me that much.
I disagree with you. If someone annoys me, it's probably not a good spot for me or them to be, because if I'm there, they might get decked, and if I deck them, then I'm in a way. Police session. But yeah.
For me, it's something that I can then focus on that instead. I could focus on the game, for example, or what I need to do. Do I need to move this regiment here? And how will that help the person I'm playing with? And will this create a more enjoyable experience for all of us? But if I'm with someone who annoys me, or maybe we're talking about a subject that is going to annoy me, we might have a difference of opinion about something that, and it's something we have deeply set beliefs on. I'm going to like the challenge, but I'm someone who enjoys verbally sparring with people and getting annoyed somehow or other actually brings me joy. All that stuff. It's weird.
We call that sadism. Okay.
The debate, I think, brings me more happiness than actually whether I come out on top or not. It's just, let me get in there. I need a dock is what it is.
I agree with you on that, actually. I quite like arguing points, especially when I know I'm going to win. But
that does
never do that with your wife, because you always lose.
Oh, I learned that the hard way, because when we were first together, this was something that brought me a lot of joy. I thought, well, everyone must like it, right? Because I was dumb and I just figured everyone liked the same things is what it was. Well, no, they don't. And you would think I would have known that, but for whatever reason, as a nerd and a geek, I was blinded, and basically being a man child means blinded by everything else, right? So I was like, no, this is gonna be fun. And no, it wasn't.
I think that's something that people really have, like, going back to what you just said, man child, that's essentially what men are. Like, it takes a lot. We grow up a lot longer than women do. We take a while to mature. And so I would be the first to say that I am more than happy to grab a Nerf gun and shoot the crap out of people. And I'm almost 30. And I've still got I think I have a long ways to go to be mature. And I think that effect, like, again, going back to the depression topic, that's where it's at. We can get upset by the silliest of things, but again, the most minuscule thing can help us recuperate. Like that, like throwing, like for some men, it's going fishing, hunting, motorcycle riding. Like, men have these ways of getting over things that, to look at it, you know, how the hell does that help? But it does. And it's really good. There is if I can remember the name of it, there is a charity, wargaming event that happens in England once a year. And it is for men with depression. And I cannot remember the name of the charity event. It happens every year. Now, I first heard about while watching Beast of War, a couple of years back. And I thought, that's really, really good. And then I actually found WSNS, another really good publication. And it's not just me who sees wargaming as a really good solution to handling emotional distress.
It was interesting for me because after you and I had set things up and we're working on scheduling for you to come on to this episode, I then proceeded to get in contact with someone else, and I wanted to get Joseph Pittington on to talk about the miniature wargaming documentary. And so when he and I actually recorded its episode before this, one of the things he said to me, and I can't remember if it was before we were recording or if it was part of the recording, but he's talking about one of the new subjects, one of the new people in the documentary, and partly why they're having to do the second Kickstarter for funding, is this person they want to follow who suffers from here in the States, we would call it PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, but in England, they refer to it as combat stress. And it's this veteran, he suffers from depression from this and how he's using it to create a wargaming company. And I think it's terrain that he makes. I might be incorrect, but he started off making terrain for him, for his friends. His buddies at the club would say, hey, can you make this? I'll give you, you know, a tenner or whatever. And then it's grown into a startup.
That's not Mal the Terrain Shooter, is it?
Do you know, they didn't say the name of the guy that they did. I unfortunately don't remember. It's going to be in the documentary. That I know. It's a good chunk of it, or it's supposed to be anyway. But just the confluence of this topic now seems to be like the time to discuss it, really, and that it's going to get more and more attention moving forward.
Well, that's it. Well, there is a YouTube channel that I follow, and he's, I'll tell you what, I don't usually plug YouTube channels anymore, but if you can get onto the Terrain Shooter, he's a bloke from England, and I swear this is the bloke that you're talking about, because, he is, that's exactly what he started making terrain for buddies and doing, the odd commission jobs, and he just finished a beautiful, D-Day table for bolt action. This thing is immaculate. You cannot fault it. He's a very talented man. And I think I could be wrong. So disclaimer on this one, I could be wrong. There has been times where he has given mention to some form of depression. And definitely in struggles. He had an issue last year where he didn't know if he was able to continue the channel. And I think the community outreach and, raised some money. I had the opportunity to, send him a little bit, not a lot, because myself being, not the richest person in the world. We're comfortable, but not the richest, but, it was good to see a band of the community get together and help one of their own, especially someone who just in a YouTube channel gives so much to the community that he does. Excuse me.
Yeah, you know, I was just doing a quick search while you were talking, not probably the most professional thing for me as a host to be doing, but I can't say whether or not it is him. I know the general outline of the story that is going to be told in the documentary about whomever the person is. I was just excited to see that here's a person who has an ailment, an illness, and they're able to, you know, try to battle and try to overcome it by having this company and do these things that can then help other people. And you might think, well, how is selling terrain or maybe it's miniatures? I honestly, unfortunately, can't remember. But how is that helping other people? Well, if there's a need for something and people want something, and you can provide that service and that good, that does help people. Because, and this is going to sound dumb, but think how many people want to wargame a specific time period or a specific conflict, and nothing's made for that. And they think, well, you know, I don't have the skill to sculpt my own figures, to cast them and all that kind of stuff, but I have the money. I could buy it. I could then paint or whatever. But if it doesn't exist, they can never do that. And maybe, just maybe there are people who would benefit from doing this because maybe that's how they're going to overcome whatever troubles are going on for them personally. And by not having this available, that's kind of holding them back. That's that hurdle that they can't get past. So if someone is offering these goods for sale, it sounds dumb, I know, but it could help them. I think it's interesting how with wargaming, people think, or at least I think a fair number of people think it's like, you know, this big company. And I think they think like Games Workshop and all these kind of large companies and Battlefront and stuff. But it's really more of a cottage kind of industry where this is going to be an odd word to use, but it's almost incestuous where everyone kind of knows one another and does stuff for one another and works for one another. All the big names, they've worked here and there and then they're going to do side projects. But even like the smaller companies and the clubs and the organizations, it's a small, small world. We all end up knowing one another. And I think one of the benefits of that is when we see that someone's having some difficulties, whatever they might be, I think we all end up having a pretty good heart. And if we're able, we try to help one another in whatever way that we can. So it's, again, we have that sense of community. And I think community is the key for all of this, where we're able to just support one another and be there to be a shoulder when needed to kind of lean on. And also someone to say, do you know what? You need a kick in the pants too. And maybe that's the thing that some people need to kind of just get up and get going. I'm someone who, and it might sound odd again because that whole masculine ideal, but I'm very like, I'm a cuddly teddy bear kind of guy. So I'm the one, if you need a good cry, you come to me because I'm going to be crying 10 times harder than you are. And I'm just going to be, my wife and I, we went recently and we saw the new Finding Dory movie. And so the theater was pretty empty, mostly adults and some kids. And I'm sitting there and I'm the poor idiot, right? Crying throughout the whole darn movie. I'm like, oh my God, baby Dory. And I'm going, oh, and I'm trying to hide it because I'm like, I'm in my 30s, right? And I'm married and I shouldn't be crying in a theater because I'm a man, right? But I tell you, I dare people to not cry when Dory finds her parents. I tell you, cause I'm right there. I'm like, I have tissues.
Spoiler alert.
Let me get the napkins out. I'm like, oh, and the tears are rolling down. Total cuddly teddy bear.
Yeah, you know, I will say this. I watched just recently, Toy Story 3 with my young son Alex. And I'm sitting there, again, it was Star Wars syndrome all over again because you grew up with Toy Story 1, Toy Story 2 come out. And then you get to the point where Annie gives away the toys and you're thinking, this is so sad. This is the worst thing ever. And it actually reminds me of a point in, this is an older movie and I dare say a lot of people in my generation have seen it, and that's the movie, Sleepless in Seattle. If anyone's ever seen that movie, there is this really good scene in this movie where Tom Hanks' character has a few of his friends over, and the women are talking about these sad movies, and then they start alluding to that men's movies don't have anything sad in it. And the men start talking about the movie The Dirty Dozen, which is a fantastic World War II movie, and just saying how there was a sad point in that movie, and then they actually start crying at the dinner table thinking about these sad points in these movies. And I remember crying in Saving Private Ryan. I remember crying at the end of The Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. I remember crying in Apollo 13. And these are all movies that were aimed at men. They were supposed to be big, thrilling movies and all that. And I dare say that I bet just because you didn't like The Force Awakens, I'm still willing to say you cried when Han Solo died.
Do you know? Force Awakens is really a topic for another day, but I tell you, I saw that coming from a fourth of the way into the movie and I thought, oh, they're gonna do it. No, they can't, because that is just way too easy of a cop out. Of course they're gonna do it. No, they're not. And I'm like, JJ, you can't do this. And of course he, anyone who hasn't seen the movie, you'll find out what happened. But I was incredibly disappointed with The Force Awakens. And, for me, I can't consider it a Star Wars movie for me to have those Star Wars feels about things. And these are feels I get about, well, not to the same degree, but they're feels I get about wargaming and about podcasting and all that kind of stuff, where I get just excited knowing that I'm going to go and hang out with some buddies and play some games. And we have coming up soon, this is great historical wargaming store just outside of Boston called the Hobby Bunker. And two or three times a year, I think it is, they do these amazing game days in the store, and all these people come and they run games and you can learn how to play stuff or whatever. And so one of them is coming up soon and I'm just looking forward to going, maybe going with a buddy and playing some games and seeing what's going on and, just getting excited about all of that. Yeah. But I tell you, if the time we go, if the game day was like The Force Awakens, I'd be like, oh, I don't know if I can go back. I don't know. I might not be able to do such a thing.
I have to say though, regardless of the movies and things that you find, this is where you can tie Star Wars syndrome back into wargaming. And like, for me, I love wargaming, the Napoleonic Wars. And Napoleon, this is a bit of a historical fact, he actually, when he took his men out of their country, he carried supplies that would deliberately make them think of home, give them nostalgia. That's where we get nostalgia from. And he would purposely do that because if his men were thinking of home, that made them fight for home. And again, that's where if we get nostalgia, the fact that my son loves Star Wars is because he sees what Jedis, and he will then get in that nostalgia and go, I'm going to be good like a Jedi because Jedis are good and they have these cool lightsabers and stuff and they're honest and they're virtuous and they're all this. And then as he gets older and becomes a war gamer, he's going to go, I'm going to be strict. I'm going to be in a good way, strict in a good way. I'm going to be, organized. It's going to take my time. I'm going to get it perfected. And it's this like little Zen sort of thing going on when it comes to wargaming. And that's another point to make that the wargaming is a Zen. You've got so many aspects of it that you can spend a lifetime trying to perfect. You've got the painting, the collecting, the army building, the playing, the rule set memorization. You got so much to it. And I've got a friend of mine who he runs campaigns, he runs leagues and trying to organize conventions, those sorts of things. It's a Zen, you take your mind out of the world and into this little tabletop empire that you've created for yourself, which again, like, have you ever seen a depressed monk on TV? I haven't. So.
No, that's a good point. I think another good point that you made, especially regarding the films in that scene with Sleepless in Seattle, but also how you were relating some of the films that you've seen that have given you those, as I like to call the feels. I think it just kind of it goes to show the differences between men and women and that it's okay to have these differences, right? That we're not all the same and that's something that's going to touch a guy in a certain way. It might be different than something that's going to touch a woman in a certain way. And that if you are suffering from depression or whatever, it's important to realize it has to be approached in different ways based on the person. It's not a one solution fits all kind of thing. You have to tailor it. So for you, wargaming happens to be a salve that you can use. And are there certain aspects of wargaming? Because as you've mentioned, wargaming is huge, right? It just has this vast breadth. There's everything from creating an army list to painting the models. You could sculpt stuff. There's terrain. There's actual playing the games. There's talking about it. So many aspects to this hobby of ours. And I'm sure that you've found maybe some aspects just don't work so well for you when you're feeling that darkness and that other aspects are like the light of God. They shine right in and make everything better for you.
Well, yeah. To painting for me is very therapeutic. When I'm anywhere between about to go down and above, I feel good when I paint a miniature to a point that I think is, especially for me, a half decent job, and people go, "Oh, that's cool." I made myself my own version of the Casket of Souls for my Tomb King army, and that got a lot of good attention, and for me that goes to this point where I'm like, okay, I'm doing a good job. This is something I'm really good at, and I actually find peace in it, and it's this little tangible thing that I can do and measure and whatnot. But once I get to this point where I'm starting to go down, painting becomes more like a chore, and then it's picked up. The other thing that picks me up from that point is reading the rule books. So it's like these layer things. So I start really delving into the rule books, reading the fluff on things, taking the time to just have a good read. The unfortunate thing with that happens is time becomes a big factor, and it becomes difficult, especially with a family, and it's quite a time absorbing thing having a family. With three stepchildren, my child, another one on the way, the projects that my wife likes to have done around the house and around the yard. And so by the time I actually get a chance to sit down for myself, it's 10:30 at night, everyone's in bed and I'm too tired or too down to actually get off the couch and do anything about it. And then that where the next phase that sort of helps is when every Wednesday night, that is my game night. I go out and I game. Without the only things that hold me back is if my wife's really sick, or I'm sick, or coming up if she is in labor. But we'll figure that out. Hopefully that won't be on a Wednesday night. We'll find that out soon. But regardless, that getting out to the game night and having a game, having a chat with mates, something refreshing about it. And again, it's this loop. So if I didn't go on a Wednesday night to game, I would be so far down at rock bottom. It's not funny. It's like these layer effect things that help me, most of the time go back up to the next level. But if I do drop, I've got these things to fall on, and it becomes a different aspect. And thankfully, like with I'm at the moment trying to come up with an idea for a board game war game RPG sort of thing. And again, having something like that to go to as well, is for me a really good, buffer if I needed it. So answering your question, that there's a number of things depending on the level of depression that I go to. And it's something that I've taken a lot of notice of, which is quite interesting for someone to be sort of that self-aware while they're depressed, to know what to do to try and get out of it, which is quite uncommon. And I'm not trying to talk myself up on it, because I think the way my brain works is quite paranormal to most people with some of the things that it does. Hopefully that's answered your question a little bit there for you, John.
Well, it sounds like, just like there's no one solution per person, that you have to have many different tools in your tool belt when you need to deal with this. And if wargaming happens to be one of those tools, there's different types of those tools to use depending on the situation. So would you say if someone is suffering and they want to see if wargaming could be a solution for them, or a way to just kind of alleviate some of the pain, that they should keep on trying, even if they're like, well, I play games and that's not working. Maybe they need to switch over and spend some time reading the rule books, or spend some time reading the fluff, or go into terrain making, painting, or other things.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that they should definitely look at a different aspect that can draw their attention away. And this is where I'm going to give you some advice from Uncle Josh. I used to say, work on. It's time for your Uncle Josh to give you some advice. And that is it is so easy, and it is almost too easy to fall into this trap where you absorb yourself into the hobby to the point where you ignore your loved ones and your own self-respect. So like personal hygiene and your health. As you just gotta be that, yes, it is important to look after yourself mentally, but you also have to look after yourself physically, and it's also the physical environment around you. And also the environment that wargaming can be. I'm lucky enough that I have an addictive personality. I know that, and I try to avoid certain things that I'm addicted to. Wargaming is one of those things that I'm addicted to, and I'm okay with that. I'm going to let that one slide. However, due to my faith, there are certain substances that in order for me to remain what we call temple worthy, there is a code of health that our church has, and within that code of health, there's five things that we don't partake of, and three of those things you can find quite readily in most environments, especially in tabletop wargaming, and that's tobacco, alcohol, and illicit drugs. That is, and those three things are things that I think, when you are depressed and you're in an environment that, especially with the culture, is drinking is quite a heavy part of the culture. In Australia, double that, because we drink most countries over the table. You get to this point where you are depressed, you just feel, you need that mood enhancer. Sometimes it's not a mood enhancer, it's a mood depressant. And I've seen friends of mine go down that road of alcoholism, which is worse than depression. So it's a bit of a warning. I'm not preaching this because of my faith. I'm preaching this because it's plain fact that if you are depressed and you start drinking, you are not going to be happy. You're going to get more depressed.
Well, there's that saying, happiness is never found at the bottom of a bottle. That's something I truly believe. I think for you, I'm not saying that you would go down that road, but I think for you, it's really helpful that you have this relationship with your religion in that you want to adhere by its tenets. And one of those tenets is stay away from that. That is just, it's not a good thing and you need to stay away from it. And knowing that you feel so strongly about it, you're not going to do it, that the temptation might be there, but you're going to say, do you know what? I can't, I'm not. And that's good. You have that wall there that will prevent you from going down that avenue, which would not, as you said, wouldn't help at all.
No, that's it. And it's not just about adhering to those tenets. It's just thinking like for myself, like I'm fortunate enough to hold a calling within my church that's put me in a leadership position. So it's also setting an example for other people. And that's something that I have always thought of one of the most important things for anyone to do is setting a good example for other people. So I think of like all the people I war game with, or the people I associate with, they're going to look at me and they go, yeah, he is sticking to those things. Maybe I should stick to my beliefs. And those beliefs could be completely different to mine. I don't really care. It's part of our faith to give men and women the benefit of following the beliefs that you have in your own best conscience. The people that I have no respect for are people who say that they are a certain thing and don't behave that way. That's, if you want to lose respect from me, that's a big, that's, have that. say you're a Jewish person and you go off and have a massive bit of pork and I know of its tenets, that will lose my respect. And it's the same with people who, again, if you say you are depressed just to get attention, that is one of the most vile things people can do. And I've seen it happen. So many people just pull out this I'm depressed card and they post things on social media. Or they call people and say they're going to do something stupid only for depression, not for depression, only for their own, just to get attention. Again, there is so much to do with this subject that I could go on and on and on and on and on about it all. And going back to what wargaming does for it is you don't know what the person you're playing is feeling or thinking, but you can set an example for them and show them that you're approachable. You can show them that if they need a release, that, hey, even you just want to throw a couple of dice and move some plastic soldiers around, that you're there to do that and you're not going to judge them. And I think we need to make that community, our community of tabletop wargamers aware that that's how we should be doing. We should be giving an opportunity to those who we game with and associate with an opportunity to have that release for themselves. So it's not just about what we can do to get out of wargame, it's what we can give to the community ourselves to help other people through it.
One of the things that I've kind of learned as a result of having a child is I tend to be oblivious to a lot of things. I focus on what I'm doing and I keep my head down and that's that. And I can ignore just about anything else that's going on around me. I've slept through fires and all sorts of stuff. And having a kid has helped me to see that not just children, but everyone is always watching. Even when you don't realize someone is noticing what you're doing and how you're behaving and what's going on, they do. And they may not remark about it. They may not let on about it, but people always do notice it. So I think by being in a position where you are trying to hold yourself to whatever moral standpoint in whatever situation that you want to project to the world, I think that the world to some degree does pick up on that and that it influences everyone else. And so by having something like wargaming where you can get together with people who may not be the same as each of us is, it's good because it provides that safe place where, you're there for the game, you're there for painting or whatever that the purpose is there. But within that safe environment, you can then kind of just slowly put a toe out and slowly put a hand out into these other areas and these other topics and kind of see what's going on and test the waters, as it were. And if you get a positive response, you're able to then kind of venture a little bit further out. And if you don't, you still have a safe area in which to reside. And you can say, okay, do you know what? It's going to be the game. I'm going to play the game. I'm going to paint. I'm going to do train make at night, whatever it is, and that you can keep on going back to that safe environment. Whereas if you try to do some of these things and you're just out and about in the world somewhere else, it may not be or might not feel anyway as safe of an environment. And I think a lot of wargamers, not all, of course, But I think there's a large segment of wargamers, especially of certain ages, where they might be considered kind of the outsiders of social norms, and that these particular wargamers want to have some sort of safe place where they can cling to people who are like them, who are going to accept them for who they are and not feel that they're under attack. And so having that, I think it's beneficial for all of us, whatever our situations are and whatever we happen to be going through. As I like to say, you never know what goes on behind closed doors. You can be driving down the street and think, oh, these are really, really nice houses. But behind those doors and inside those walls, there could be a lot of unhappiness. And just because someone has money or has stuff or doesn't have stuff doesn't mean that they're feeling what you think they might be feeling.
That's it. And an interesting fact to take away from what you just said is when we dehumanize anyone or objects, that's when we start being very negative towards them. And you can see an active way of doing that is when you're driving. Someone cuts you off or is driving slow or doesn't indicate properly, you will automatically, and I can guarantee most people do this, you will automatically call them a name that you would not do to their face if they were there. Because you've already dehumanized that person, because it's a car. It's not a person. You're not seeing a face. You're not seeing eyes. You're not talking to someone. You just see this idiot who's decided to cut you off, or this moron who didn't indicate properly, so you had to wait there for him instead of actually turning. And if we, that's the trap that we can all fall into. We can dehumanize the people we play with at wargaming, because all we're seeing is a combatant on a tabletop warfield. And again, we've got to be very, very careful of that. And I have to say that the wargaming club that I go to, that's avoided so much, because at the end of a night, we're all packing up, having a chat. People go, where was so and so tonight? Is he okay? I haven't heard from this person in a while. Have you heard from them? And everyone's talking about them. We're mentioning names, and yet we do have a bit of a laugh every now and then, or every night that we're there with each other. We're just always taking the piss. We're always doing things to really just, you know, muck around with each other. But at the end of the day, the folks do. That's what mates do. They tease the living crap out of each other. But if someone needed someone, they're there at a moment's notice. And especially in the community that we have, like at the end of the day, it's the community that makes this hobby an amazing place to be, especially for someone who suffers from a mental illness that debilitates them, that makes them feel like they're nothing. I've got a friend of mine, Tom, we talked about Tom before. He is black and white colorblind. He is one of the best painters of miniatures I have ever seen. I've put some of his stuff up on the podcast before. He is colorblind and he paints to a heavy metal perfection, in my opinion. And again, he could sit back and let that illness that he's got, disability affect him. But no, he's turned his inability to see colors into this talent that I can tell you now that I can't paint anywhere near his things. And you can do that in wargame. You can do that. You could say, you might not be good with numbers, but you can come up with a fantastic list and you can work out the points perfectly in your head. Or you might not be good at reading, but you can take the time and learn to read and read the books and and memorize the fluff. There are so many benefits to tabletop wargaming. And I can tell you now as well that most tabletop wargamers are not the kind of people who would hastily jump into the bandwagon of supporting a war if it happened. They would be the ones that would sit back and go, do we really need to do it? They would question it. They'll question everything about it. And I think that's also a bit of a stigma that people have, that we're warmongering sadists who just want to go up and put the whole world in flame for our own amusement.
Well, I think it's related to what you're just saying in that I have this theory about war movies, that any really good war movie or so-called war movie is one that is an anti-war movie, because it portrays the harsh realities of what happens there, and that I think there is a just cause for war sometimes, but overall, I think that most of us don't want to take anyone's life. We don't want to deprive anyone of the happiness, and we don't want to have to put them through hardships where you're separated from those whom you love and you're sent to places you don't want to really be sent to. And at the end of the day, if a war movie is really a good, just solid film, it's going to portray all the difficulties involved and all those harsh choices that people have to make. And I think you look at a film, Saving Private Ryan, you mentioned, for example, it's stuff like that that's within that war movie that gets those feels out. And that's why a tear might come down your eye, or a film like Das Boot, brilliant movie. And Das Boot is fantastic, not just because it is a war movie, but it's because it's about the people. And you really get to appreciate them, that they're not the Jerry's and we got to go kill them because they're the opponent, they're the enemy, but they're a person just like you and me. They're, in most of the times, they're kids. It's kids going off to war. It's not people you're my age. It's people who are 18 years old, 19 years old. They're kids going and fighting. And I think when we look back at history and when we look at the games that we're playing, the historical periods, and even if they're, you know, sci-fi, fantasy, or pulp or whatever, we look at it, it's not people in their 30s who are doing the fighting. We're moving plastic toy soldiers of kids around on the table. And that's what it is. And I think it's good to put that into perspective. When I talk about people whom I'm gaming with, I've tried really hard to move away from referring to the person I'm playing a game with as my opponent, because I like to remove that antagonistic stance from it, so that it's not that I'm against them, I need to beat them. And we all like to win, but I think it's more important to focus on, is it a fun time? Are we having an enjoyable time together? It's about the experience, spending time with one another, instead of I won, I'm the best, or I lost, I'm nothing. And I think once we can remove those stigmas, I think it helps. Is this the most important thing in the world? No. There's many, 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 many things in the world that are very important. But it's a small aspect that I think we can easily deal with wherever we are. And so I think it's good that we can, you know, do what we can for that. And so for me, my small way is, if you and I were playing a game and we're playing against one another, I would really try hard to not refer to you as my opponent. I would say, well, the guy I'm playing a game with, and it gets wordy, right? But I think it's important because it takes it away. It doesn't cause you to be dehumanized. It doesn't treat you as an object. It allows you to remain as a full, complete person and someone who is no different than me. And at the end of the day, it comes back to the community, doesn't it? And one of the things I love about the community is how the community interacts with one another. So for me here with Wargaming Recon, my favorite part of the show, no matter how much I love talking with the guests or if I'm just doing a show on my own, is when I get to do the mailbag section. So for example, I have a little bit of listener mail that came in on I don't know if it was our Facebook page or a different Facebook page, but it was about episode 161. And that's the one that just came out right before this one, Josh, with you. Miniature Wargaming, the movie's second Kickstarter with Joseph Pittington. And listener Richard actually had something interesting to say. Some people might think that I only share listener feedback that's glowing or positive. I think this will prove that's false. So listener Richard has this to say. He says, quote, "It would have been nice to see people like Richard Clark, two fat lardies, totally innovative and have changed our hobby, in my honest opinion. Other scale manufacturers, 10, 15, or 20 millimeter maybe too, rather than just Warlord or the Perrys, who get plenty of publicity on their own," unquote. So Richard's referring to content for the documentary in this. And on one hand, I kind of agree that it would be nice to have a broader view of things that a lot of the guests, I think that director Joseph Pittington is having, are people who are GW or former GW people. But I think there's a reason behind that because, yeah, they get a lot of publicity, relatively speaking. You know, I mean, Wargaming is still a niche kind of hobby. But the reason why they do is because they're the ones who are doing a lot of really interesting stuff, and they're the ones who are moving around and creating these things. So I don't feel like you can talk about historical wargaming nowadays without talking about Warlord, because primarily of the rule sets, they got Black Powder. Without Black Powder, you don't get Hail Caesar. Without Hail Caesar, you don't have many other adaptations that they did for Black Powder and Hail Caesar with those rule supplements, and then you lose all the miniatures that Warlord's making, and you lose actually a lot of the Perry's work because of that, because they're making a lot of Napoleonics and American Civil War, knowing of the popularity of the Warlord rule sets. So you lose like that whole section of wargaming, and Napoleonics is something you've mentioned that you love. That's the largest, most popular range of wargaming for most people across the globe. And there are many, many, many different rule sets that people use for historicals. And I know not everyone loves the rules that Warlord has put out, but enough people do that I think it's mainstream enough that if you take that away and you do a documentary, you do a film about wargaming from the beginning to current, I think people are going to wonder, well, why aren't you talking about this? Why don't you have people covering this kind of stuff? And yeah, it'd be neat to have, smaller manufacturers and other things. And I'm not trying to refer to Richard Clark as a small manufacturer. Two Fart Larities is an amazing gaming company and one that definitely deserves to have coverage. But if you start drilling down, you get really, really precise smaller groups. You also, I think, lose interest among a mainstream audience, and then you just get the choir preaching to the choir. And, at the end of the day, does that do any good?
On what you're saying, if you go to the 6mm scale and looking at different manufacturers, I mean, you've got GHQ, you've got H&R, you've got heaps of, like, Scotia, they used to do, I don't think they still around, but then you've got irregular miniatures, you've got all these different manufacturers manufacturing the exact same thing, they're just doing it in a different way. And that's where you start doing, okay, who do you go? Who do you go for? And I can see where listener, Richard, coming from saying, yeah, why are you going for the XGW people? And I think a lot of people, they are a bit butthurt because of what GW is doing to a lot of the games. Again, they were all entry gateway drugs to where we are now. Like, we all played Warhammer. We all had a look at 40K. Let's be honest. Again, playing devil's advocate, there is a reason why the Perry brothers no longer sculpt for GW. There is a reason why Alessio Cavator and Rick Priestley no longer write for GW. There are reasons for that, and there are reasons why they all go now to do what they do best, and that's creating games. They are one of the oldest bunch of people in the hobby in our generation of gaming. They are like the superstars, and if you want to do a movie on wargaming, having those names is what's going to draw the cards. And I see where the director is going for with this. I agree. But again, there is a way of following the big kids in the block while also including the small kids in the block. Look at some of the Kickstarter, like Hawk Games for Drop Zone Commander. Include those guys. They're feeling new on the block. You've got a whole bunch of opportunity there. And again, you can't please everyone all of the time, especially if you're making a documentary on wargaming. He could do this first movie, wargaming documentary, based on old school guys. Next year, do another one based on those who are starting up with Kickstarter, the Kickstarter generation of wargaming. I think that in itself would be a very interesting look at the hobby and the stress that people go through. There is so much there. So I think that his point is valid, must say, but again, you have to look at it from the production side, especially how successful do you want this to be, especially if he's going to be like, I was listening to your podcast, he's aiming to take it to the film festivals and he's aiming to get it promoted. And I think he'll do a good job. On Netflix there's a documentary called On the Battlefield or something. I think it's called On the Battlefield, and it's about Magic the Gathering and going to pro tours. There is a market for it. So good on him, and I hope he does success, and hopefully he comes to Australia as well, because that would be awesome to see.
Coming up on the next episode, I have Jasper Ortiz coming on, and he's going to talk about the Great Wargaming Survey for 2016. He's come on in the past, and we've talked about previous incarnations of this. I think the survey could actually be a tool not just for Karen Sideway Publishers, but for a lot of us in the hobby to see what is popular and what kind of ranges and aspects and what trends are there. One of the things that they've always looked at is that, I'm going to use the word myth, is there really agreeing of the hobby? Is that something we need to be concerned about? And through previous survey results, and they get a huge, huge pool of respondents. So I would say it's that their results are pretty fair to use. It appears that there is not agreeing of the hobby. That's just our perspective of things. But if you use their survey and the results from it, I think you'd see, well, what are some of these other ranges, these scales, these companies that maybe could be worth including in a documentary or could be worth talking about or pursuing for your club next time you run a game at a convention, and it's going to be a participation game. Is it worth doing that 10 mil scale or do people just not care? What kind of guests should you have if you come into one of these things, and who do you want to link up to? If like 1% of the population globally is interested in, you know, whatever, maybe that's not where you should be putting all your time and your effort into. But again, you don't know without the facts. And so I'm really happy that Jasper and all of those guys over there are working on this and they're going to have that coming out. It's kind of unfortunate that, you know, I never thought to ask Joseph Pittenden if he had used previous results in his kind of thought process for the documentary, because maybe some of those results, if he had looked at them, and maybe he had, but maybe some of those results would have helped to validate what Richard is saying, that, you know, like, get two Frat Lardies on there. And let's talk about things like Chain of Command and I Ain't Been Shot Mom and all that kind of stuff. Or maybe they would have been like, do you know what? People like Two Frat Lardies, but there's just not enough demand for it. And maybe it's not worth pursuing. And again, I don't know, because I don't have that information and numbers in front of me as we're talking, but having this available is cool because they make it publicly available. You don't get like the raw data or whatever, but they tell you like, you know, it's this percentage for this and this percentage for that. And in the past, they've actually used, they dive into the hobby because they have, at least one of, if not all of the folks over at, why is the name, WWPD, News from the Front, they kind of help, analyze the results and things. And I mean, that podcast talks primarily about, Flims of War and Battlefront, and they cover some other games, but it's a flagship podcast for their huge network that covers all sorts of tabletop gaming, miniatures gaming, historical gaming, and they're all very smart analytical people over there. So knowing that they are helping Jasper and everyone to kind of dive into these results and see what it means and stuff, I think that's a good thing, and it's something that they've done in the past, and I presume they're going to do in the future. But I think it's also going to be important for all of us, just as board gamers, to see what games should we be playing. Is there something underrepresented that maybe we've always loved and maybe we shouldn't put our time and effort into? Or maybe, like, I love Feudal Japan, right? But is there, I have a hard time finding materials for it. Is it worth me to pursue Feudal Japan as a wargaming topic for me to dive into and play someday? I won't know until I look at the results, because maybe there's nothing there and I'm just going to spin my wheels, as it were. But it's neat that we have all this available, and I think it kind of goes back to that community and the global cottage and village that we kind of all inhabit.
Yeah, no, I totally and utterly agree with that, because one of the biggest things that I see with the hobby when it comes to manufacturing, it's so expensive to get into it, like Fireforge Games, why not sell a box that has enough for two armies at a reasonable price? Or and that's for the Deus Vault rule set. Hail Caesar has a half-decent sort of double, like, Gallic versus Roman set, but again, it's not enough to have a proper fielded army on the table. It needs to be this set where you've, like, the two big double sets that I love that come out, and that's the Open Fire box set by Flames of War and the two-player starter set from Drop Zone Commander. They are perfect for what they are. And even Battlefront Games, and I hope one of you guys are listening when I say this, do a starter set for Vietnam, do a starter set for Team Yankee, not just separate, do a two-player starter set like you've done for Open Fire for Vietnam, Fate of a Nation, and Team Yankee, because that would be so much more sense. It makes it so much easier for people to get into the hobby, and that's what they've got to do, is get people into the hobby. And I forget where I'm going with this, but it has a point. It goes to people aren't into it because it's not available. And I haven't taken time to look at the survey this year, which is quite odd of me, because in the last couple of years I have taken part in it. And there should be a thing. What do you want in your community? What do you want from the manufacturers that you follow exclusively? And that's okay. Two play starter sets are going to break the bank. That's something I think that needs to happen.
I think you're right. If we can make it easier for people to get involved with the hobby, they're going to do it. And there's many obstacles to getting into it, but I think there's ways that companies and other wargamers like us can kind of help one another to make it possible to bring more people into the hobby. And, you know, maybe that's something for me to discuss in another episode of the show. At this point, I just have a few announcements and things to share with listeners.
Oh.
I want to remind everyone, of course, that as I said at the start of the show, Wargaming Recon is the newest member of the TSR Podcast Network. We're the flagship wargaming podcast over there. And TSR is it's an amazing group because they're helmed by Jason Elliott and affiliated with all sorts of really cool tabletop gaming people, predominantly role-playing games, but they're kind of branching out and doing all sorts of stuff and just a lot of wonderful people there, people I've managed to meet from going through conventions and things. And so it's fantastic. So although I'm there for Wargaming Recon, it means Wargaming Recon did leave Trolling the Corner, and I love Trolling the Corner. It's dear to my heart. I'm still there because I got geeked explicitly there should I ever release another episode of that show, which I'd love to time in being a
part of. I know I'm with you on that, but I need to get on my podcast again now that I've again back on the up of the depression spiral. So
I can usually
I'll release one this week.
Well, I can usually tell how you might be feeling based on whether I see things online about whether you have a new episode coming out or working on one. And so when I see like that kind of stuff, I think, oh, things must be good for Josh. And if I don't, I think, oh, do you know what? Maybe he needs either some time for himself or needs like a little boost. And that's what I use as my bellwether for you for how things might be going.
You know what I need? I need a kick up the bum when I'm not releasing podcasts. That's what I need. I need something to go, hey, oi, get one out. We need one.
I'm glad to send you a kick up the butt if that's what you need from WWE. I can do that. Teddy bears can kick, right? I also need to make sure that I say how grateful I am to the sponsor for the show, the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the people, they put on Huzzah. It's, I think, my favorite tabletop historical wargaming convention. It happens up in Maine, here in the U.S. Josh, if you're ever, well, you're going to be coming to the U.S. at some point, I think, but if you're ever around the area in May, you need to go to this thing. For 2017, they're having it May 19th through the 21st. I'm going to be there. I'll be doing a live recording. I got to work out the details with all of them. But they're just an amazing group of people. It's a wargaming club, actually. And they put on the convention and they take over this whole hotel. It's beautiful what they do. It's right in Portland. It's gorgeous there. Great place to go with family and, things to eat and you can play games and stuff. But it's a good group of people who just, they want to give back. They want to foster the hobby. But they also do a lot of outreach, which is, it just is wonderful, really. So, I have to say without them, I don't know how I could still do the show because, as you know, podcasting and wargaming and all that kind of stuff, it's expensive. And the other side to it is I get a lot of support from people who back me on Patreon. And Patreon is a cool thing because we've mentioned Kickstarter a little bit. Patreon's kind of like Kickstarter, except it's on an ongoing basis. So if you were to think that someone's going to release a board game they want to make, instead of doing a Kickstarter, they set up a Patreon account so that you support them every step of the way from the beginning and not just like that final push. You do it for like however long you want. As they're working on the game and they're writing the rules and they make the minis or whatever, you're supporting them every month or whatever. And so I have people who support me on Patreon, and I tell you, it's wonderful because not only is it the support, but then I'm able to engage with them through Patreon. Patreon's kind of like, think like Facebook, I guess, but without all the, like, we're going to decide who can see what you see and what you say and all that kind of stuff. So it's cool that you can kind of treat it like your own personal club where you can just kind of reach out with people and interact that way. I have a new thing I'm doing with Patreon where I have a new reward, actually. I've been trying to talk about it throughout all the episodes. So I have these really cool custom wooden dice, the D6. They got a Wargaming Recon logo on them. And if you back at the $18 reward level, you get a set of 6 custom Wargaming wooden dice. I'll mail them to you. I have to thank Christopher Rett for making the dice and designing the logo and everything. These are really good dice. I bought from him, I don't know, a bunch of them, a bunch of sets. I'm going to keep a set for myself because I love them. And I think they're a cool thing to have. And I've wanted to do something like this for the longest time, but I couldn't figure out how. And then one day I was online and I was talking with a bunch of people from the Maine Historical War Gamers Association. And Chris was like, I can do a logo for the convention. We can do some cool dice for the con. I was like, could you do cool dice for me as well? I picked them up at Huzzah 2016. And so it was great. So I have these. If people want to back $18 reward level, we'll get you a set of one and I'll mail them to you. And then I need to thank Dave and the War Games at Battleshades Facebook group, Patrick and Chris Parker. I have many different reward levels, and one of the reward levels is you can choose to be thanked by name on episodes that you support. And so Dave, Patrick, and Chris Parker of Day of Battle Games have chosen to back at least that reward level. So I want to make sure that I thank them, because really between MHWA and my Patreon supporters, it continues. And, you know, I still fund a lot of it myself, but every little bit that I don't have to fund is a great thing, because then I can do cool stuff with the money that comes from the sponsor and from Patreon. So for example, and actually this impacts you directly, it's a cool announcement kind of way to link it into this, is that on Patreon, you can have these cool goals that you can set up. So you can say, like, if you bring in X amount of dollars, I do it on a monthly basis. If I get X amount of dollars of support from you for each month, we can do this, so we can do that. So I rearranged the goals, and the first goal that was reached under my reorganization, I guess I should say, is that I'm able to actually hire Josh to do my show notes on a monthly basis for Wargaming Recon. And this is going to sound like me whining, and maybe I am, but I hate writing show notes. And the reason why is I love doing the show. I love communicating with everyone. But what I really love is spending the time creating the content and booking the guests and interacting with all of you who listen to the show and watch live. I don't love having to sit at my computer and like type up everything that I was talked about on an episode. So knowing, Josh, that you're willing to take the information and type up the stuff, it's beautiful, because it's saving me time, which I can then do, use for other things for the show. I can spend more time with the family, with the kids, and then I can work on all sorts of stuff. And then also, like, Wargaming is helping one another. So it's beautiful for many reasons. And it's because of Patreon that I'm able to do it. Cause if this goal wasn't reached, I would never have been able to approach you and say, hey, do you think you'd be interested in doing this with me? Cause this would be cool, I think. And so Patreon goals are a beautiful thing. They can make all sorts of stuff happen there. And if people want to support us on Patreon, wargamingrecon.com/Patreon is a way to do it. I'll have links in the show notes. Because I'm still doing show notes until, what is it, beginning of July-ish, when you're going to take over, I think. And
that'd be around then.
Somewhere around there.
It'll be after our baby is born will be the definitive time.
Yeah, because that's coming up very soon for you.
Too soon.
So busy. I don't know how you're going to do it. I think one's hard enough, but you could have enough. I don't know. It's going to be wonderful, but not easy by any stretch of the imagination. And I also
just it'll be five kids in the house, so it's going to be hectic.
Wow. I don't know how you can have time for sleeping or anything, never mind anything else, but I guess you'll figure it out.
One day.
And let's see. I want to remind people of some upcoming episodes, which you can check out at the episode guide. Again, link in the show notes. Next episode comes out July 18th, 2016. And that's when Jesper Ortiz will be on to talk about the Great Wargaming Survey 2016. And then I believe the August 1st episode, I'm going to talk about commissioning a miniatures painter, things to do and to not do. I'm currently going to be talking with some people who take commissions to find out what they like and don't like from customers, and pitfalls and all that kind of stuff. And then I'm still working on rescheduling this, but a little bit further down the road, I'm going to have Alyssa Faden on. She's going to talk about Enfilade, which is a very popular wargaming convention out on the west coast of the United States. And then there's a Kickstarter I'm going to be talking about too coming up. The Kickstarter is actually happening, well, now, but we're going to talk about it afterwards. It's called Rampaging Jotun. It's a board game with Vikings. I think it's supposed to be good for all ages, and I'm going to have the creator Dave Nighthawk on, and he goes to TotalCon with, I also go to TotalCon, but he's going to be on and going to be talking about the Kickstarter, the game, and all sorts of cool stuff. And I think that takes us through probably August and part of September of 2016. And wow, this has been a jam-packed
episode. That's good to be back for a bit. We're almost 2 hours long, almost. 15 minutes and we got it.
I know we're winding things up because, like you said, it's been almost 2 hours, but one of the things you mentioned earlier about depression is that for you, it's important to have the many different tools available depending on what kind of phase or stage you're at with the depression to know what to use to combat things. And for me with the show, in order to make sure that I'm productive, especially with all my other responsibilities, I work full time, I'm married, I have a baby, house and honey-do lists and all that kind of stuff. I have to be as prepared as possible in advance because otherwise things don't get done. So I'm someone, I need a list. I crave that order and I crave having the list. So by having this on available for people, it's kind of two things. One, I think it's really good for listeners to be able to see what might be coming up and topics and guests and when things will be coming up because then they know like I'm not just gonna like go to Antarctica for a month or whatever. All right. And then two, it holds me responsible because it's my peer pressure to say, okay, I promised you that on July 18th, you're going to have an episode to listen to. I need to get you something to listen to and not just anything. It has to be worth your time because otherwise what the heck am I doing? If I'm not creating something valuable, then I'm not doing anything useful and I'm not like, why bother? So it has to be worth your time, but I got to deliver. And between that and the sponsor and my Patreon backers, like I need to deliver to them because they support me every month, whether I release one episode, 100 episodes, no episodes. I don't want to be that guy that says, thanks for the money, but I'm not giving you anything because that's just not cool. I want to be giving far more than what I'm getting. And this helps me to do it. If I know what I'm doing. November 21st, I'm doing my holiday gift guide 2016. I got to have these things planned. Otherwise, they don't happen. I tell you, my life is ruled by calendars and lists, and I'm sure it would drive some people crazy, but it's like a nice warm blinky for me. It just makes me happy.
I know the feeling, and I think for me, it's like I need to get to a point where I can have a sponsor and I can have more Patreon backers on my Patreon. It's like I get exactly where you're coming from. I'm just a few steps behind. So I know exactly where you're at.
I wanted to encourage you because you need to keep in mind that I know you've been doing the radio thing for a long time, but for podcasting, you're still relatively new with us. I've been doing this since, oh God, 06. Oh my God, I've been doing this like 10 years. And wow.
You're an old
But I am just now kind of at the position where some of this kind of stuff is happening. And so different, you got to keep it in perspective that I'm not saying it's going to take you 10 years to get there. You're going to do much better than I have and avoid a lot of the pitfalls I've done. I've made far too many mistakes over the years, but you're going to get there. You just keep plucking away. You got a wonderful thing there with the hobby desk. And I tell you, I look forward to every single episode that comes out and I love listening to it. It's the one podcast I can't wait to listen to. Whenever I see it, I jump on, I'm like, I gotta download it, I gotta listen to it. When do I get a break at work for me to listen to this thing? Cause I need to. And there are other podcasts and radio and things that I like to listen to, but I don't feel the way about them that I feel about your show. So your show truly excites me.
What's really interesting is everyone says that. There's a handful of people go, yeah, you're such a good podcast and your content's fantastic. And I'm thinking, it's rubbish. It's absolute garbage. It's just me sitting in front of a microphone going, I think this miniature looks cool. But it's people like to hear that for some reason. And I'm like, oh, I'm giving you something you like. It's great. Oh, more than happy to do that. And again, I love doing the hobby desk. Then again, it goes back to the depression thing. Reasons why this is radio is my dream job. I'd love to do it again. So local radio stations, please take note that my resume is ready for you to go at any point in time. And it will be on More Gaming on my radio. But anyways, I love doing it. And it's just, again, it's one of the levels and I've got to try and make it so it even is at the bottom level where I'm actually doing it. But I do appreciate your compliments on the podcast. It makes me feel really good and really bad at the same time that I haven't released the podcast in about 2 months. So I better change that. And as I said, I did make a promise. I'll do one this week and I'll get one out and we'll have to decide what I'm going to talk about, but I will do one.
I can't speak for anyone else, but for me, the thing that really stands out about you, not just with your show, but with everything you do, is how authentic you are. Some people just come across as fake, that, like you said, they might say something, but maybe they don't really mean it. With everything you say and do, you can tell that you mean everything behind it, and that you have a lot of just raw emotion and feeling behind it, that you want to do the best that you can do, and you want to provide something worthwhile for others. And I feel that shines through. I completely pick up on that, and that's the thing that I love the most about, just about you. You are incredible. It's because of that. So just always kind of hang on to that.
Thank you. Well, it's actually really good to hear that specifically at this point in time, because this week I actually put my formal nomination in to run for our local government as I think you call them aldermen in the States. So what we call a city councillor. So knowing that I come across as authentic, even when I think I sound like an absolute jackass, but if I'm coming across as authentic and actually doing it, I really, really appreciate that compliment.
Well, Josh, thank you so much for taking the time to come on Wargaming Recon. I've had a blast, which might sound odd that I've had fun talking about depression, but I've learned a lot.
Again, you're a sadist. This is the second time I have to say this to you today.
You've helped me to learn a lot, and I hope you've helped others to learn a lot too. And I think there's just stuff here that we've talked about that are going to help a lot of people. So thank you for being willing to share your story and to share the troubles that you go through. And I'm sure it wasn't necessarily easy, but I truly appreciate it. Thank you.
No problem at all. Gladly do it again at any point in time.
Well,
even at almost to midnight my time.
Yeah, that time difference thing is always a problem for us, isn't it? It's not quite a full day away.
Well, I actually think it, like, the time that we started this show is a really good time, and I very doable as well, for me at least. So I don't know how it is for you, but it's very doable for me on a Saturday evening.
Well, I have a little one, so I'm usually up between 6 or 7 o'clock my time in the morning, and I might not necessarily be so chipper first thing in the morning, but I'm certainly awake. There's always that.
Well, when I did the breakfast show, it was just a really interesting thing where we would start the show at 6 o'clock in the morning, and we would go for the first 2 hours where I'd be quite monotonic and like, in the news today, someone killed somebody, police are looking into it. 8 o'clock, right at 8 o'clock would happen, and then it would just be this crazy idiot version of myself would come on there. And unfortunately that happened on the day of Michael Jackson's death. So like right on 8 o'clock we started getting all the news that Michael Jackson died, and I said things that I probably shouldn't have said. It caused a fight on radio between me and my co-host, and it was just this horrible turn of events where I got in trouble by my station manager, but at the same time pat on the back by my station manager for creating some of the funniest live fighting dialogue that radio station has ever had or ever had since. So it's quite the funny story that even my old co-host and I, we look back on, especially with the fact that he is a diehard Michael Jackson fan, and he was telling me that I was going to hell, and meaning it quite literally when I was saying the things that I did say.
I had to mute my mic because I was laughing way too much. Well, thank you again for being on Wargaming Recon, and do you have anything actually you want to plug before we conclude?
I'll send you the links that you can put in your show notes, as by way of revenge before I start doing your show notes for you. But again, I have a Patreon for my podcast, The Hobby Desk. Again, check out The Hobby Desk. Not only do I have the podcast that I aim to do regularly and will be trying to do regularly, I also have a YouTube channel where I put product reviews, battle reports, time lapses of games. I did do a vlog for a short time, but podcasting came before the vlog, which is, so we stuck with that. And as I said, the Patreon, and that's, if you want to be a supporter of the Hobby Desk, just check us out. And if you have any questions, queries, you want to appear on the show, shoot me an email at thehobbydesk@gmail.com.
Cool. Well, I hope people will do that. And thank you again for being on the show. For all of you listening, you know the deal. I kind of made fun of it a little bit last episode, and thankfully no one called me out on it, because that would have been really bad. But no matter how busy you are in life, no matter what's going on, no matter how depressed you are, I hope that you will always know that you have to, you gotta keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other great shows on the network.
This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew, who helped give the show its name. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah will take place May 13th to the 15th, 2016 at the Doubletree Inn in Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming in New England at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.